we are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep. The poor and the underclass are growing. Racial justice and human rights are non-existent. We have been lulled into a trance. They have made us indifferent to ourselves, to others. We are focused only on our own gain. That is their primary method of survival. Keep us asleep, keep us selfish, keep us sedate.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here's your host, Michael Storm.
Today, click, tap, smash, do a double axe handle, elbow drop from the top rope, whatever it is you have to do to get that like button to respond to you. Let me know you're out there. Do it now. It's the best, easiest way to support me, aside from, of course, a simple visit to the comic book store, Amazing Fantasies here in Topeka, Kansas. That'd be pretty cool. We'd all win with that. You would pick up some Amazing Fantasies type goods, which, you know, comic books and action figures and pop culture stuff and just a fun place to be. At Toward Anarchy, wherever on the social media. If it's not at Toward Anarchy, it's probably not me. I can almost assuredly say it's not me. And of course, at towardanarchy.com. You can visit towardanarchy.com to follow along, as always. And you can... When you're at towardanarchy.com, you can sign up for the newsletter. That's what I was trying to think of. You can sign up for the newsletter. You could win yourself a copy of Economics in One Lesson, the great book by Henry Hazlitt. I still have plenty of those to give away, and somebody gets one every month. And new people sign up for the email list every single week, and I barely send anything out, so I won't be bothering you much for it. Let's see. If you go to towardanarchy.com to follow along, looking for episode 2610, I do believe it will be, and we will jump into a little bit of conversation. I have guests coming up at the top of the hour. I just had some things I wanted to chat about, but before we get into that, I just want to remind you to support Republic Broadcasting. Visit republicbroadcasting.org, click on that donate button there over on the left-hand side. It's really easy to spot. It says donate. It's orange. It's kind of right up near the top over on the left-hand side. And once you do that, a couple of clicks after that, you make a one-time donation, a regular donation, whatever it is, any amount. It's up to you. You control it all. You could also give the network a call and talk to somebody there, 800-724-2719, extension 3, if you would like to find ways to help support republicbroadcasting.org. It's a great place, Republic Broadcasting. It's a fantastic group of people. I'm lucky to be associated with a network like that at all. And it's not that I necessarily that they agree with me on everything that I say, or that I agree with them on anything that they, there's so many people across the network. It's an amazing place. They're giving a voice and a place for a lot of people to come and have the conversations and talk about fun things. And I'm proof of it, and have been for years. ShopRBN.com. That's another way to support the network, of course, and that's the win-win. You support the advertisers. They continue to buy advertising on the network, and the network continues to be able to feed all of those poor, starving producers, all of the people that are they're doing all the work. I have the easy part, believe it or not. It really, truly is. I don't take it lightly. I really am appreciative of the fact that the network is there and that they do what they do. And we all know that anyone can do this these days. You can do this real simply. Boy, people really overcomplicate it. It's amazing. I'm out there in the mix, and I see people really, really overcomplicate the process and what's required and what you need to do. But anybody can do it, but not everybody is able to associate themselves with a network and other people who are just trying to tell their stories, just trying to tell the truth as they see it. And it's a great place. It's you'd be surprised what you'd find across the network. You may assume because it's something you hear here, or maybe just the name Republic Broadcasting. There may be something that make you think that you don't want to know what's going on at RBN, when in fact there are so many different voices and so many different things being talked about, so many different subjects all across the network at all different times. I have just a couple hours every week. All the rest of that time is filled with other people and other voices in different places, all around the world, different views, and it's just amazing what they're able to do on the shoestring budget that you guys make possible for them. And I'm really excited to be a part of it. Always have been. And when they came to me and asked me to do a couple hours for them, I said, yes, absolutely. And they've been wonderful, and I've had a great time doing it. And I hope you guys are enjoying it. I hope you guys are enjoying the new sort of changes, some fun things going on. I've been working on an application for the comic book shop for Amazing Fantasies. I've been working on the app to help us manage our inventory a little bit better. We don't do a strict inventory, but we have to inventory enough that we know what we're buying in to put in people's pulls and what will go out onto the shelf. And hopefully not very much out onto the shelf ultimately, because that's when you start getting things. Problems with having too many books, spending too much money. I'm doing the taxes right now for the corporation. It's fun, and it's double fun this year because we split. You know, last year, basically right down the middle with two different corporations. It was Hooked on Comics before, which was the old name, which is a name I never liked. I don't think any of us liked, except for the one guy who came up with it. And I was just tagging along at the time. I didn't care, so it didn't matter to me. But now I'm not tagging along. I'm in the lead on this thing. I wanted to sound like a comic book shop, or at least something that people go, Amazing Fantasies, what's that? Yeah? It's definitely a catchy name. But I've been working on this app, and it's making it so we can manage our inventory a little bit better, and it gives us the opportunity to do something that most comic book shops don't do. Very few of them do, and that's have an app for their customers to be able to manage their pull list, because we want you to come in the store. Face it, I want you to come in the store. I want you to come in there because you don't know what's in there. You have no idea what we've been putting out. We're putting new stuff out all the time, constantly, and by new, I mean, you know, stuff, not necessarily brand new, vintage, whatever. Stuff is going out all the time. And it's a it's a constant thing, and it'd be really cool to be starting from this point. It'd be nice if we were starting here at this point where it seems really kind of easy and things are going well and the flow is good and not have to have been involved in the struggling to get it to this point. And it's still a struggle. It's still monetarily, it's a struggle. It's very hard to do selling things $2 at a time. And that's ultimately what we do. Even on the new comic books, you know, we're buying the new comic books for $2.50, and we're selling them for $2.50 after we bag and board them. That's, you know, 25 cents, something like that. And that doesn't include paying the rent and all those things. And so it's a struggle, $2 at a time, but it's fun. It's wonderful. People are reading. I get to iterate. I get to experience things like I will tell you about here in a minute. There's a few things that I wanted to mention that just because I haven't been talking to you. I hope you've enjoyed getting to hear a few more voices. I'm working on having more guests, period. That's just dedicating more time to guests and sort of breaking up the commentary into separate little packages, not necessarily trying to do hour-long commentary like I have for years, and then a guest. There may be two guests in a week. That just may be how it plays out. I'm just dropping content on a more regular basis now, with having conversations with more people, and then still doing things like this, still wanting to talk to you about what's going on in the economy, what's going on in your rights and your democracy, your republic, and some of the interesting other things that we get to talk about, and this story that I have to tell you today, and just the conversation of what is an anarchist? That's the sort of question to keep in mind today. Keep that question in mind as I'm telling you everything else, and we'll get into it here in just a minute. Because I wanted to, we haven't been together because I've had more guests, so I haven't been doing as much commentary. And what commentary I have been doing has kind of been done separately, and will probably continue to be done that way. And it may not be limited to just an hour. It may be shorter form, or it may be longer. That's part of having a little bit of fun with it and trying to loosen up just a little bit. And that's why you may end up with a couple of hours, a couple of guests on one show, just because the time, filling that specific time. Some of the things I'll be doing, I'll turn on the microphone and I won't shut it off for an hour and 15 minutes or something. And then that doesn't quite fit into the 57 minute time slot that I work with to do the show for the network, and so I want to keep that format. I think that's a fantastic thing. It also keeps me set as in line. It keeps me with a general sense of what it is I want to do core for a little bit. I hope you've been enjoying that. I hope you've been enjoying that and will continue to enjoy it. And I hope you enjoyed the app. If you've gone to towardanarchy.com, if you went from your phone or a tablet, it may have forwarded you to the app, and now there is an app, and it's just a simple thing right now. I've been playing around with the AI, of course. I've been coding for 40 years, and I've been able to code all sorts of things in different types of programs, interfaces, hardware. I've done all these different things over 40 years of playing around with computers and code, and getting to use the AI for the first time to develop that app for Amazing Fantasies for the comic book shop to do. Our customers are going to love this thing. There's nobody else is doing anything like it. Even anybody who is doing something like it is doing it through a third party. So it's a really great thing for our customers, and it's something that, because I know how to code and because I know how to structure code and make it work, I can sit back and instruct the AI to do the coding for me. It's like I'm the manager of the coders, right? Which this would be a thing. This is a thing. There's the guy who manages the project, and he may or may not code. He may code some of it. He may not. He may just direct others to code it. But unfortunately, he's generally still just another coder, and he's not a guy like myself who's trying to look at it from three different perspectives. I'm looking at, can it be done in code, obviously, but I don't have to worry about that as much because the AI handles that part of it for me. I just tell it to do it, and it figures out how to do it. I don't have to figure out how to do it if I don't already know. But it works for me as the store owner. I'm looking at it from that perspective as a store owner, trying to manage my inventory and to make sure I get my pulls in there and make sure I'm getting what my customers are asking for, managing that, seeing that the numbers come out right when I make changes to something. These are all things that someone who knows how to code and someone who knows how to code databases in particular, like myself, can do. You can't just go in and tell AI to create a database for you. It's not going to be very good. It will be what you want it to do. You may be able to manipulate some things and save some data and retrieve some data, but it's not going to have all the nuances, all of the fine points. It's not going to necessarily, let me give you an example. This would be something that everyone understands, right? So you go to make a wholesale change to something. You want to change a bunch of things at one time, particularly in a database, whatever. You highlight all the things and you click delete, or you click whatever thing it is that you're trying to change it to, right? You're making a change to all these things at once. Well, what happens 99.9% of the time when you're working with computers, when you make a wholesale change of any kind, whatever it is, it doesn't have to be what I just described, but generally you're making a bunch of changes at one time to a bunch of different things. What do you get? You get a confirmation, right? Well, the AI doesn't know that. The AI doesn't understand that. It knows that confirmation is a thing that you do when you're working with files, when you're asking people whether they're sure, but it doesn't know to just generally insert one of those things on there. So it's little things like that. It may not seem like a big deal, but it absolutely is, because it's how you end up destroying data with the tool and not necessarily the user, especially when so much of it is automated. And it has been for a long time. There's different integrated development environments and tools that I've used over the years to build different databases and to build different front ends. And so working with the AI is really fun. It's been really a treat to do it, because I'm sitting back and I'm looking at it from the user perspective too, the customer, not just me, because I'm also one of my customers. That's whether I'm somebody that uses this platform that I have to manage my own pull list and the comic books that I receive every week. And so I'm looking at it from all three of those perspectives. It really gives me the ability to do that, and it's been fantastic. But in relation to Toward Anarchy and towardanarchy.com, if you've been to it recently on a phone or a tablet, it will redirect you to a little app that I created. It was the first one, and just playing around with the idea of, well, can I do this and can I do it simply? Because it was things I can already do this. It's right there. It's been at towardanarchy.com for years. Those things that are being done in the app are being done right there at towardanarchy.com, but they're not app size. They're not in an app. They're not encapsulated. It doesn't have quote unquote, I guess, you know, the towardanarchy.com has a webpage feel to it, whereas this has an app to it, app feel to it. And people are used to that now. It's simple. It's on their phone. It's just a link. It has the hamburger menu up in the corner. That's what the little lines up in the corner of all the apps are now. That's what they're called. They're called a hamburger menu. When you tap on it, it opens up the other menus. It has that look and feel to it. And it's very simple. It just has a player built into it to play the recent episodes. And it has, you know, the links to Facebook and Instagram and X and all the @towardanarchy stuff where you can always find me on those places. But hopefully you're enjoying that and the slight changes in the show as we go forward. And nothing else would change. You won't even notice. If I hadn't talked about it, you probably wouldn't notice at all in that sense. Maybe not even the app thing, especially if you don't ever go there if you don't ever go there at all, or if you don't ever go there with a phone or with a tablet, because if you go there on your computer, you wouldn't notice. It doesn't do anything different. It doesn't take you to the app. It was fun. I really enjoyed doing it. But I wanted to talk about a couple of things, and I have this wonderful story to iterate to you and sort of answer at the same time what the question of what is an anarchist, because I don't know what the answer to that question is, and we'll find out why here in just a minute. But I just want to comment on a couple of things that are happening, because obviously I always follow the economics of things, and it's just obvious we're all wrapped up in it. We're all caught up in it. It's around us all the time. And I've been very right about things, and I pointed out things over the years and talked about how they manipulate numbers and that things aren't getting better. And that continues to be true, even though we have these, you know, fun little things like they tried to do with the January jobs report. It just came out not too long ago. And of course, the people in the media, the pundits and the politicians are trying to use that to suggest that things aren't as bad as they have been, and things are as bad as they've been. And it's funny, because that's the one of those things that for all these years, you know, what we're 15 years now or something, just doing this sort of thing, talking about the jobs numbers and how the jobs numbers are manipulated and how they change the jobs numbers all the time, and people don't necessarily pay attention. They don't hear that part. They hear the immediate thing. They hear the hype around the idea, oh, well, jobs are up. That must mean things are good. Well, guess what? Jobs are up for a lot of reasons, and the most obvious one of those reasons is because they're wrong. The numbers are inflated, and they have been. The numbers from last year were inflated from I believe they came to some total of around 1.1 million jobs they were off last year. And I think it was something similar to that the year before, although I think we had to do the math on that one. They didn't do the math for us. But it's been fun to watch the jobs numbers and how people will pay attention to them now that they didn't for so long. They were just put out there and people accepted them for what they were. And I would talk about it all the time. And then all of a sudden it's become vogue to analyze these numbers and to make sure to remember that they get changed a couple of times throughout the year, and those numbers come out there now. They're so much easier for the average person to, because I'm not going out and specifically looking for them. In fact, even when I do sort of mess around with the news sites and the aggregate news information that I try to get, aside from following or liking something, a particular website, a particular news agency, just and a wide range of them at that, I don't interact with the content so that it doesn't skew towards me or my biases. There are limited things. There are things that I'll give it a thumbs down because I just don't want to see it. It's not important to me. I don't care about it. It's not a headline I'm at all interested, not a topic at all. But other than that, I don't give it the thumbs up to very many things at all. There'll be a few key things, rights issues, a few economics issues, things like that, but very little, so that my tastes aren't what's influencing the thing so much as the content that they're trying to push, whatever's popular at the moment. That's what I really want to see, generally speaking, when I'm going out there looking for these things, because I'm trying to look at them from the average person's perspective, and what am I seeing if I'm out there trying to look at all? And man, if you're talking about the economics, it's confusing. I don't know how. I know how people are with the economics because they only listen to one side of it. They only listen to one particular view of it, and those who, even the other side of the view of the economy follows the same economics. You know what I'm saying, right? The left and the right, the people in control, whether they're complaining about money spent here, money given to this, whatever here, people on welfare, corporations on welfare, whatever it is, whatever boondoggle, these all of that money, all of these taxes, all of the things that they're using, the tools to do that, are the same for the right. They're arguing about who to give the money to and who's keeping the money and who should get the bulk of it. They're not arguing about the fact that it's theft. They're not arguing about the tools used to do it, just the places where it's being spent. And that's why government continues to grow. And that's why we're $56 trillion in debt. And of course, that's not real debt. That's not, it's fake debt. It's government debt. It's their lending. It's not really a debt that you and I owe. There's parts of it, possibly, maybe. No, not really. The debt that they're talking about is not. It's not our debt. It's not the debts that you and I agree to that we pay our bills on. Pay our bill. The bills that we pay every month. The things that are going out. That's what we're paying. We're paying our debts. Are the things that we've paid somebody or we're paying somebody to supply us a service or a good or something. Very clear. This is all. This is interest. This is boondoggles. This is theft. This isn't voluntary free market. I sought it out and will honorably repay, and the people will honorably provide me the service that they said. It's collective debt created by the political class to pay themselves and their criminal co-conspirators, some of their voters, some of the constituents, some of the rich people that help put them in place, whatever it is. It's not for the greater good. It's for their greater good. It's for what they call the greater good. It's not for the actual greater good of people. And we find ourselves in ridiculously amount of debt because we're tied to what they have done to us and to our economic system. Not as tied as many people want to believe or afraid to believe. You can cut yourself loose from it all fairly easily. I have conversations with people that talk about such things. In fact, coming up at the top of the hour, you might want to stick around on that. Just a little hint of that and that conversation and the debt conversation. So the economy is just terrible, and the tariffs haven't done any good because the trade deficit is just as bad as it's ever been. It's hardly changed from sort of a year ago, and it just continues to increase. Because what happens is it'll increase in one place or a decrease in another place. So if we decrease the trade deficit with China because we raise these tariffs on certain products and goods, or global tariffs, that's what that Donald Trump has run to do now, because the courts have told him that his tariffs are bogus, that his excuse for raising the tariffs is bogus, that his claim, his legal claim, is not valid. So he's now enacted, I guess, it's happened. I don't know. He's one of these guys. He says things and things happen. I know my father-in-law is like that. He says things and thinks things happen, and they don't. This guy, he says things and things happen, and his global 10% tariff everywhere, I guess. So that's his response to them telling that he's a liar, and it didn't fix anything. That's the bigger point, and people like myself have been telling you that it wouldn't fix anything. It's cost us more. Americans have paid the price. There's no question about that. And so it's all just a scam. It's just a huge economic scam. They're grifting you. Three ways from Sunday or whatever. That's some kind of phrase like that. What? Six ways from Sunday? I don't know. It's something like that. They're grifting you, and they're getting away with it. And I wanted to – there's a couple other things. I don't know about spending any time on them. The Nancy Guthrie thing, that thing is wild, right? It's been about 3 weeks now. And they're still chasing this, and it's a wild story in and of itself. But then you take some of the connections, the political connections, and the things that are in the background there, and it becomes even more wild. I don't think there needs to be any conspiracy for somebody to just snatch an old rich lady in the middle of the night, especially if they happen to know who she was related to. It doesn't seem particularly out of question at all. It doesn't happen all the time, but it is definitely a thing that happens. And so I don't know that there's necessarily conspiracy, but I don't ever want to dismiss that either, because it's all very convenient, right? There's a bunch of political stuff going on there. You can go look for yourself and find out how the Savannah Guthrie and the president and the things that are going on there, Epstein, there's all these names, and they're all tied together, and they all relate and interact with each other, and whether they have anything to do with each other or not, and this kidnapping doesn't really matter, because these things are all about opportunity. Like most crimes are crimes of opportunity. I was just telling my son about this the other day, about how that so many crimes are crimes of opportunity or crimes of passion, that the easiest way to avoid crime is to not provide the opportunity for somebody. So you don't leave things out open in your car, right? You don't leave your phone in your car. You don't leave your backpack in the car where people can see it. Stuff like that. That's most of the things stolen out of cars is a crime of opportunity, as opposed to necessarily, or not that there aren't such things, organized gangs of people going around robbing cars. It ultimately, it tends to be one of these things, and it's true here as well. But what happens is that no matter what, these things can be used as an excuse to further an agenda. And we already know that the White House, that Donald Trump, the current president here, has an agenda. A police state adjacent agenda, a police state friendly agenda. He uses the excuse of law and order to keep his power, to maintain his power base, and that is the people that also believe in this joke that is called law and order. It's scary. The closest, because it's one more step. I've been telling you for years, I'm not the only one, and I admit that, and I do it all the time, and I don't need to, because I'm not the only person here. You know, I'm not the only person talking about these things. But it's kind of the point that if I've been talking about it for a long time and can see it coming, these things like this should be red flags. The idea of centralizing the police, all the police, not, you know, all your local police, all your state police, everything centralized under the federal authority. And we're getting closer and closer to that. ICE is a huge step toward that. The power that's been given to ICE, Border Patrol before that, has been a huge step toward that. And I think this is another one of those things, because of the proximity to the president and his willingness to dictate things, whether or not the courts like it or whether or not his constituents or anyone else likes it. He is the definition of a dictator in that sense, for sure. He will come along and he will say that they need to federalize the police, that things like this can't happen, that we can't, you know, he's so close to it it's just another pretext for centralizing policing authority under a federal system. It just seems to me that that's it's something that they're going to use. It's just another part of the narrative, another piece, something else that they're going to use as an excuse, something that they're going to use to try to make their case, to suggest that we need a cleaner, that you know, that'll be the argument. Well, it's everything filters through that central authority, all the information, all the policing, all the crimes, all of the control over the police and the jurisdictions, in the various jurisdictions, they all run through a central authority. So of course they're going to be much more efficient. Well, you see how well the federal government works in other places. It's not very efficient, especially the further it gets from Washington. Very, very much so. All right, those were just a few things that I wanted to mention. They were just interesting things that are happening that, you know, we spend time talking about, and I hadn't had a chance to really look at it. It's always fun to sit here and be right. Without having to go through the haughty process of saying that I'm right. I had a couple of wonderful experiences right in the same day, within a few minutes of each other. I'm just in the shop the other day, and there are any number of people who come in all the time, regular faces, and there's a young man who comes into the store fairly regularly, runs through, and he's, I don't know, he's probably just out of high school, maybe a year or so out of high school, and just starting to find his way in the world, and he's a reader, so there's a little bit of hope for him, right? You know, there's a lot of things that kids are today, and readers is not necessarily one of them, so there's a little bit of hope for him. He's at least going to have a better world view through language and words than many others may get in some senses. I'm not one of those people, I'm not a snob who believes that you have to be a reader to be able to learn anything or know anything. You have to be able to read, of course, but you don't have to go out of your, you don't have to read comic books to be to learn or know something, but you can, and you can learn a lot from them, and you don't have to read the latest Stephen King novel or whatever it is. that doesn't prove how smart you are. It just proves that you can read a book, and it doesn't necessarily make you any smarter. It can. You may learn something from it that you didn't know. Hopefully it's good information, because there are plenty of books, just like there are any number of pieces of information anywhere, whether it's the internet or whatever, that aren't good bits and pieces of information. They're not correct, and they're not organized properly. They're not well thought out. They're not presented. They're not meant to be taken as literal, especially when we're talking about so-called fictional pieces of work, which is most authoring. If we're talking about story books, if you're reading books, and who wants to read, just sort of academic books all the time? If you're trying to learn, you want to learn something, I suppose that's what you have to do. But I don't think the rest of us want to be entertained, and I'm one that I don't believe there's any particular difference in the value of entertainment regardless of how you get it. In fact, the argument is that with books that you have to imagine things, and I believe it's exactly the opposite of that, and I've read plenty of books. It's the exact opposite of that. In fact, if you have to imagine the things, then the author's not doing a very good job of telling you the story, because that's literally what he's doing, is telling you the story, is setting the scene and painting the characters and the pictures for you so you don't have to paint them yourself. What do you get in 16 pages and maybe, I don't know, I can't even imagine how many words worth of dialogue in the sort of average comic book today. It's probably not much, but there's a lot more message in there between the art and stuff that isn't said, the things that aren't said, than what is. My point is that if you like to read, there's a certain discipline there that comes with it in wanting to experience that particular brand of entertainment than other types of entertainment, because it's not instantaneous. It's done for you, but it's not done for you. You actually have to sit there and read it, and you have to know what the words mean. And if they say the color blue, well, you probably have to know what the color blue is. Well, most of you may be screwed at this point, because I bet we could probably set up a color palette and lay out several different colors that I would say are not blue, and someone else would say are blue. So, yeah. this young man, he comes into the store and he hangs around fairly regularly, and I think he follows the store on social media, and I'm pretty sure he follows me. I don't use any names. I'm not using any names. I don't do that. I don't need to do that. It's not necessary. Even if the stories I would tell were parables and not real stories, it wouldn't matter. It's not about the names. It's about the story. It's about what happened. It's about the sense of things, not the detail of who and what. And you want to know the color of his skin? Does he wear glasses or not? None of this will help you. So you don't need to know his name either. You just know he's a young man. And he's in the store fairly regularly. And we chat and have, various conversations here and there. But he was clearly determined the other day when he come wandering in, because he come right in. And unfortunately, I'm sitting there at the laptop and I'm doing the taxes. That's what I was just talking about here a little bit ago. That's what I was doing when he came wandering in. I'm doing the taxes. And so my mind is not on necessarily having a conversation right at that moment. And so it takes me a minute to disengage from what I'm doing and engage with him. But he comes in and he outright, he just asked me, he says, "So what is an anarchist?" And that was what really got me. First and foremost, I'm sitting there, I'm doing the taxes, and so my mind's not in that space, and I have to shift my mind into that space. And the first thing that came to mind was, I don't know. And I kind of mumbled that to him. I just said, I don't really know. I guess it's their people that's a thing. I don't know what an anarchist is. And so I sat there for a moment and I finished up what I was doing, and he sort of was looking around at things. And so then I re-engaged him and got into the conversation in earnest. And I said, I don't know what an anarchist is, man. I can't answer that question for you, and I think that that's the wrong question. I think that the asking you know, what is an anarchist doesn't really matter, because there are a lot of people that run around, call themselves an anarchist, and they do different things and act different way, and you can't see anything through necessarily their behavior to distinguish what makes them an anarchist, or the things that they claim that make them an anarchist aren't what other anarchists say. And there are all these divisions in anarchists and in the anarchist community. There are different flavors of anarchists, and I've never really gone through them, but I've mentioned some of them, because most of them are complete nonsense. It's just people playing with words, and it's people lacking in understanding or trying to separate themselves from usually it's economics. They don't understand economics. They don't understand the core of economics, and that it's a function. It's a natural function. It's not a that it can be a manipulated function like anything, but that it's a natural function, and that they play little word games and things like this to try and remove themselves. They create their own separate economy and think that they're doing economics differently. There's two separate things. But there are all these different types of anarchists. And so I just don't know this answer. And so I can't give this young man this answer. I just don't know it. But I say, well, I can tell you that I'm an anarchist, but I can't tell you anything more than that, except that I can tell you what I know the word anarchy to mean. And so I said, you know, look up the word anarchy. And so, you know, ultimately we get to the point of anarchy is no rulers. And that's a very specific thing. And so I take him down this conversation, this path. We've had other similar conversations before, but I don't know that he necessarily had he didn't guide the conversation. They were just conversations that we ended up having about things that are going on, either, you know, in the news or locally or within the store or within, you know, comic books or whatever it happens to be. And then it's just sort of relates, whereas this was much more of a direct question that he was looking for, you know, sort of specific answers, and his mind was open to these ideas. That's why I had to disengage from the laptop and the taxes and sort of try to reengage him with the conversation and explain why it was that I can't answer that question. I don't know what an anarchist is. You ask it's like anything. You ask 10 different people and you get 10 different answers as to what they are. And so that's not the question. I think the question is, what is anarchy? Well, anarchy is no rulers. Well, what does that mean? And that's when you have to get into the bigger conversation. Well, it should on its face, it should mean that I don't want to rule over you and I don't want you to rule over me. And from there, that goes to the sort of questions of morality and questions of legality and what's right and what's wrong and what's accepted as what's right and what's wrong. And so we know that there's a difference between those things, what is right and wrong and what's accepted as right and wrong. That's the difference between whether something's moral or whether something is legal and questionably moral, which there's a lot of things that are legal that are questionably moral. And all of the things, that includes all of the things that the state does in terms of claims of violation of law. Most of the things that the state claims makes against other people, against the people, is claims that don't have any victim. They're almost exclusively victimless claims, because they will be things that happen while the police are violating them for not doing anything. So you try to lay this out to somebody for the first time, because they're not, they haven't heard these ideas really before. They haven't heard that they understand innately that they don't have a right to go around telling other people what to do, but they don't realize that that's what they do when they vote. that's what they're doing. They're surrendering a power that they don't have over to a collective that doesn't care about them and giving them power to do things to their neighbor that they couldn't otherwise do to their neighbor by themselves. They have no legal or moral authority to do that to their neighbor, but now magically through this voting process, through this democracy that everybody has, it's suddenly okay to violate other people because the collective wants to do it. Well, that's gang mentality, isn't it? Isn't that just a gang? Isn't that just the bigger group of people, the more powerful group of people, the people who claim they have the right on their side, but ultimately have the might on their side to insist on the right? They get to set the stage for what everyone else has to be, and we have to live with it. And that's that gang mentality. Look, you're coming in here, you want to be part of the family, you will do things our way. If you don't, I have to turn my back on you. And they do, and they'll take you and they'll lock you in a cage. And most people don't look at the simplest violation as being a death sentence, but it very much is a death sentence. The people on the right, the law and order types, the people that Donald Trump likes to fool, they will suggest that it is hyperbole to say that someone who fails to use their blinker gets pulled over and ticketed for failure to use their blinker. The cop just signed a death warrant for that person when they accused them and told them that they had to show up and they had to pay money. And they say, oh, that's hyperbole. Nobody's going to get killed over using a turn signal. Well, it does happen. It absolutely happens in the heat of the moment. It's happened in a number of occasions that I know of. Someone with authority has used, ultimately not using a blinker properly, as an excuse to pull somebody over, and that somebody ends up dead by the time it's all said and done. I'm not even trying to take into the account that somebody maybe had an attitude and had a problem, or maybe there was a warrant, or maybe there was drugs, or any of these other things, because I'm still at the first problem. The first problem is that they claimed that I violated someone or something, that I've broken the law when I used a turn signal, or when I didn't use a turn signal. But nobody was in an accident. Nobody was harmed. Nobody was even close. Nobody even cared that I didn't use a turn signal except for the cop. And the cop, that's how he gets paid, is he sits around and waits for people not to use turn signals, to not stop at red lights, and to rob them when they don't. And he writes them a bill, and they have to show up, and they pay the banker, the judge, that bill. They pay that bill. And we'll be talking about this at the top of the hour with my guests, and you can figure out ways that some of these things, because they're not real actual bills, can be dealt with just a signature or just a claim against the person who's making the claim against you. Longer conversation. But these people don't know. They don't understand. Someone like this young man, he doesn't understand the world as it is. He's still a young man. He hasn't really had that much time out there. He's still learning the ropes. But he doesn't know that there are people out there that's all they do is they victimize everybody else. That's how they make their living. You hear about it. They're called gangsters. Well, it's exactly what the government does, too. It's a protection racket. It's where we're protecting society from you, so you're being robbed. And so I've been pulled over and I've been given this ticket for not using a turn signal, and it's bogus. There's no crime. There's nobody's property has been damaged. There's no violation. There's no real crime whatsoever involved here, and no danger to anyone whatsoever at all. You can make the claim but it wasn't. Again, it happens all the time. People go all over the place all the time without using their blinkers, and nobody cares, and it doesn't make any difference. Nobody runs into them. Of course it happens sometimes, but it's usually when they come to a stop and the traffic signal tells them to stop. It's the stop and go that gets them more so than somebody not using a turn signal. We look for people not using turn signals. We expect the lights to match magically stop people from going through them. It's an idiocy. It's a weird idiocy that we live with. But now I have this ticket, and I have to show up in court, and I have to pay the bank or judge. Some of you understand what I'm talking about. If you don't, it's, you know, maybe it's not a conversation for you, but it is a conversation that's coming up in the second hour. And I'm here with this ticket, and I have this ticket, and this is, this didn't happen to me. I'm just telling a narrative, but it is a true narrative. This ticket exists, and it's a demand. It's a demand that I pay, and it's a demand that if I don't pay, I can be thrown in jail. And if I refuse to go to jail, if I refuse to pay, if I continue to refuse, if I ignore their claims against me, the ultimate price is that they will eventually come kick my door in and shoot me to death. That's what will happen. And that's what can happen for any violation of law that the state claims against you. And so that's that gangster mentality. And it's not a power that you – it's not. I don't have that right. I don't have that power. I can't just go around pulling people over and saying, hey, you know what? You're driving too fast right here. I think you should give me $20 or $100. Yeah, $20 my butt. $100 my butt. It'd be a lot more. And I can't do that. And so how can society do that? How can I give that power? I can vote for somebody that will do that for me, and he'll hire somebody to do that, and he'll hire somebody to do that to me. In fact, that's the part that everybody misses on this whole whatever power that you give to a government to use against others is power that you give to government that can be used against you. And I know there are other people that have said that other ways, and I'll try to find the quote and include that on today's page up there at towardanarchy.com. But really just fantastic getting to talk with the young man and explain to him sort of these things. And it was great watching these interactions with people that haven't heard these conversations before. When you do them in person, they're awesome. They're really cool because you can see the reaction in their face and in their eyes, and you can see the really realization come across their face that you know what, we do things out here all the time without the need of the opinions of authority. We don't even consider it. We just do. We create the world around us, and in fact, we do it so much and so well that government feels the need that it has to rob us and cage us for doing it and tax us and figures that, oh, you do so well that they can just take this little bit for themselves and claim it for themselves and for their constituents. And you see that look in their eyes, and you see them realizing these things. And you know what? You never know if it's going to stick with them and stay with them. But I think the core parts do. I think the important parts do. The parts where you suggest to somebody that, you know, when you were five, you knew to keep your hands off other people and their stuff. And then all of a sudden you turned 18 and you vote to put your hands all over other people and their stuff, or to let other people do it for you instead of just cooperating and getting along with people and recognizing that claims against people should be made by the people who are violated and the properties who are violated and the representatives of the people who are violated. And by representatives of the people, I mean counsel, I mean legal counsel, I mean whoever in a private society that they hire for themselves to speak for them when they can't speak for themselves, either because they've been damaged or because they don't have the language to speak necessarily. They don't understand the language of law, the language of violation, the language of claim. And so and I try to explain to him, I even got into a little bit about the whole idea exactly what I'm talking about. It should be really easy to understand, actually, about why corporate why legal fictions exist, because legal fictions can't work, can't interact with real people. They have to interact with other legal fictions, and so there's this whole other reality that sits on top of what we would call reality, and it's a corporate separate political, legal reality where non-entities deal with each other because there are so many non-entity things in the world. And I use my business as an example because it's a perfect example. My business is a legal fiction. It's an entity created on a piece of paper. And it only exists because there are real people behind it that represent that. But those real people need protections. They need, especially in a society where you're constantly robbed by bigger businesses through government. You need protections. You need to have things spelled out. You need to have a way to protect yourself from others trying to take advantage of you within that other realm. It's obvious when you as a person, as a physical person, have been violated, when your property is damaged, because you see it. It's right there. That's why we make the distinction between real crimes and fake crimes, or crimes against entities, against an entity or entities against entities, because businesses and the people acting in the business can commit crimes against real people, but there's no real person that committed the crime. Do you see the distinction? Do you see the reason for it? These are the things that other anarchists that call themselves anarchists that don't understand economics don't understand. They have no concept of it. They think that things like an article of organization, creating an LLC, something like that. They think that these things are there because government exists, and that's not true. That's not true. They're there because those things are realities. They're real things that need to be able to exist in the world. They've been brought to life, and they need to exist somewhere, at least on a piece of paper, so that you can say, well, this is the thing that these people created, and it belongs to them, and this is how they manage it. And they've hired all of these other people to do these things for them, and they can't be responsible for every little single thing that those people did. This is the kind of stuff that those other anarchists don't understand at all. Man, I'm running out of time. I just wanted to tell you one other quick little story, because it's the same kid. It happened on the same day. I call him a kid because he's so much younger than I am, but he's a young man. He's not a kid, not a child. So we're talking, and he's up there at the counter, and up there at the counter I have some flyers and things from local events and people, and one of them at the moment is a local author who's writing a series of books, and he said, oh, wow, this is a local author, really? I said, yeah, we have lots of local authors and creatives and people that come through the store. I don't talk about it. I don't make big bones about it or anything, but we have at least one New York Times bestselling author that's in the store regularly. I've known him for years, been kind of buying comic books from me for almost a decade now. And so, he said, wow, that's really cool. That's really neat. And we're going on with our conversation. This is all sort of in the middle of the conversation about what is an anarchist and anarchy and all these things. And lo and behold, it's just the craziest thing. He only comes in once or twice a month, maybe. He comes wandering through the parking lot. There's this person that I'm picturing in my head when I say that we have at least one New York Times bestselling author that shops in the store. And there he is. He comes walking through, and I say to the young man, I say, there's a New York Times bestselling author about to walk through the door. He walks through the door. We're chatting. I say something about Stephen King because it's kind of horror novels and things like that, and because I know what this man writes, and I'm not using names again. And I say, well, is Stephen King one of your favorites? And he says, no, not really. And I say, well, your last thing was a vampire Western or something, wasn't it? And he says, well, actually it was zombies. And he says, and the kid says, oh yeah, my uncle just gave me a book not too long ago that I read. It was called whatever. And, I know what the book is called. And he says, it was a Western about, like some zombies and some things like that. And it was written by somebody from the Midwest as well. And I said, yeah, that's pretty cool, because he did say the name of it. And, of course, I knew the name. And I'm looking at the author who was just standing over there. And he's shopping through the comic books. And I just get a big grin on my face. And so does he. And I said, well, who knows, man? Maybe you'll be just hanging out in a comic book shop someday and you'll randomly run into him. And it takes him a minute to catch on. He's like, what do you mean? Nothing. And he finally figures it out. And yes, the author of the book that you just read, that your uncle gave you, is standing right next to you right now. It was just a really cool thing. And the author was really gracious about it because he's a humble guy. He's a quiet, peaceful man. And doesn't like a lot of hype or anything like that necessarily. But he was real gracious about it. And even Infield took the picture with him and everything. Listen, there's a fantastic conversation right after I finish talking here with my guest, and we're going to talk about, equity. That let's leave it at that. You know, stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy.